Welcome to the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. With your host, Joe Manko. Yahoo Sports. This is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Right now.
You, the listener, has spoken. Well, at least those who've voted in our Twitter poll. So for this latest episode of the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast, we will begin with what you chose as our number one topic for today, and that's the Premier League title race. I'm Joe Lago, FC Yahoo editor, and we have a jam-packed Playa Vista podcasting room with Shahan Ahmed, Alex Baker, and Leander Scharlakens. But before we get to talking about the top flight in England, we have to announce some new features. Hopefully, you are watching this podcast on our new FC Yahoo Facebook page via Facebook Live. This is something we will be doing, hopefully, with every podcast. And also, after every Champions League match day, so on Wednesdays, immediately after the Wednesday games are done, you can hop on our FC Yahoo Facebook page, and we will give you our reaction, our thoughts on that day's happenings. Also, we changed our Twitter handle from at Yahoo Soccer to FC Yahoo, just if you didn't notice. Then that's where you can find our latest blog post and get updates on the biggest games. So, guys, our listenership wants us to talk about what's happening in the Premier League title race. We don't have games this weekend. It's a FA Cup weekend, but there's still a lot to discuss. We have Arsene Wenger, who's facing some type of suspension after shoving a fourth official. We have Pep Guardiola. We have Jurgen Klopp in Liverpool. Continue to, as Leander called the performance yesterday, listless, and really don't have any answers for a defense that was torn to shreds by Swansea. And we have Pep Guardiola, who is losing his mind as Manchester City manager, who essentially has, well, figuratively thrown in the towel or waving the white flag. And among all this madness, Jose Mourinho is the sane one, which is shocking. So this is how we're going to get into the title race here. Is we're going to start from the top. Chelsea has an 8-point lead over Arsenal after 22 rounds. I want you guys to tell me, how will Chelsea not win the Premier League title this season? Who wants to go first?
So we're talking fake news here? What's going on?
Alternative facts.
It didn't take long, did it?
No. What I mean is Chelsea. How they will lose? It's only 8 points, and we still have 16 rounds to play. Right, 16 rounds is enough time to lose your lead.
There's a lot of soccer left.
Yeah, plenty, and they do have some tough fixtures. You know, in the past we were looking at this Liverpool fixture, thinking it would be much tougher than it looks right now because Liverpool are in shambles, but you have a couple fixtures coming up where they could blow a couple, if they lose 6 points, then, and Arsenal picks up all their points, which again sounds like fiction, then you're looking at a couple, like basically one match away, right? It could happen. Do I necessarily see it happening? I don't think so, because Chelsea is very solid defensively, right? And it's tough to lose matches when you're not letting goals in. And that's what separates them from Liverpool, like we talked about. And it is completely mind-boggling that all these other great, great managers, they're just losing their minds. I still think Tottenham might be in the best position of all these teams to actually make a proper run at Chelsea. But you're looking at a 9-point gap right now. I don't think they have any head-to-heads left with Chelsea either. So you're looking at you can't make it up head-to-head. And you just need them to stumble, and you need to be near perfect to come back from that. And that's only third place. Like Liverpool, Man City, Man United. Like it's fiction. This is it would be tough. It's possible, just tough.
It's a tough case to make, and I think Chelsea will drop points. There's 16 rounds. They've got some difficult fixtures. They have to go back to back. Liverpool versus Arsenal, Man United, Man City. They're all coming up in the next couple of months. But the problem is that this is dependent on the teams behind Chelsea being perfect, and I just don't see that happening with Arsenal, not with Tottenham, not with Liverpool. So it's not impossible, but it's a difficult argument to really make.
What's really interesting about Chelsea, I think, is if you actually look at the standings, they've only drawn once. Every team in the top four has lost three games or even two in Spurs' case. And that's about on target, because most seasons now the champion will lose 5-6 games. The last two seasons it was only three, but that's unusual. But then if you actually look at the number of games they've tied, Chelsea has tied just once, and Arsenal, Spurs, Liverpool, and City have tied 5, 7, 6, and 4 times respectively. So I think the strength of the Chelsea team this season is that when they have a bad game, they may lose here and there, but they're not as likely to draw points in all the other games, where they're good at sort of eking out the result. Obviously, only giving up 15 goals in 22 games really helps. So they're kind of efficient in that sense, and they don't spill too many points. What I think is really the best possibility for Chelsea to lose the race somehow is if China comes knocking for more players. I mean, they almost lost Diego Costa, which would have been a huge bloodletting for them if he really had gone to China, as he seemed to want to. But that move was sort of killed by the Chinese Federation suddenly deciding that instead of 5 foreign players, teams could only have 3, and everybody kind of already had 3 players. And so it seems like that and Chelsea's unwillingness to sell him kind of scuppered that move. But I would still be nervous if I were Chelsea that some Chinese teams are going to come in and say, hey, we've cleared the deck of a bunch of other foreigners. We want, you know, Hazard and Diego Costa and Thibaut Courtois. So it's this funny sort of situation where I don't think the biggest threat to Chelsea is either Chelsea or any other Premier League team, but the Chinese clubs.
Yeah, when news broke that the Chinese Super League had put in a huge bid for Diego Costa, I thought, oh, here it is. Here's the stumble that everyone's waiting for from Chelsea. But then that went away after a week. You know, Antonio Conte and Diego Costa hugged it out. And whatever reason you know, whether it was a blow up on the training ground over a perceived injury, or it was this, he was being unsettled by this huge offer from China. You know, that's all behind Chelsea now, and it seems like that won't be a factor as we've seen from the past weekend. But you know, one thing that could unsettle the team is if Cesc Fabregas, who can keep saying that he's happy, but that he's sad he's not getting more playing time. I mean, you know, they need him because, you know, when Chelsea's not playing its best, they go to Diego Costa. They don't rely on Eden Hazard. But inevitably, the guy who does produce the pass that leads to the chances coming on as a sub, it's Fabregas. And I saw a Squawka stat that Fabregas, since his time, his return to the Premier League with Chelsea, he leads the league in assists. He has 31. So even if it's this limited role that he has with the Blues, he's still producing. He just can't get in because, you know, Conte prefers to have N'Golo Conte or Matic as his two holding mids. So, and he's not going to take a spot from the front three.
Conte doesn't prefer Fabregas. Sad.
Are we going to do this like for the next 4 years or however long we're able to do this?
I took all my will not to just bump in and be like China when Leander was going on about China over there. But in all seriousness, like getting back to the point, yeah, it's going to have to be something from inside, right? Everything we're talking about, even China, you're talking about the squad losing players from the inside. It's not really the rivals that are necessarily going to overtake Chelsea, because when you look on the balance of play from what we've seen so far, Chelsea has been the most solid, stable team, and they're so far ahead right now at this point that it's really tough to see anyone coming back into this.
They're not very deep, though, and that's the issue. That's why they need to go to the transfer window. Even if Costa went, they're going to go buy, you know, they're going to buy reinforcements. But
they've been resilient. I think my criticism of Chelsea at the start of the season is that once you get past Costa, they're not have any depth at striker, yeah, really. But there was that game when he didn't play because of the China thing, or he was injured, or whatever you want to believe. But they went out and beat the champions 3-0. So it was like, yeah, no Costa, no problem. I think this team is any bigger than any one player. It's difficult to see this being derailed.
It was amazing to see the way after the first two goals that they came together and celebrated. And it was kind of a to show Diego Costa, like, hey, we can do this without you. Or no one person, no one player is bigger than the team. It was interesting to see that reaction. And the next week, you know, Diego Costa is back in training. Well, let's go back and talk about what you brought up, that, you know, Chelsea has some tough tests coming up. I mean, they've got Liverpool on January 31st. That's next week. And then they have Arsenal at home 5 days later. But then they have Man City on April 5th. They're at Old Trafford on April 15th. And then the run-in, who I think I initially said on our podcast a couple of weeks ago that it was pretty easy. Actually, it looks pretty tough, because after that Man United game, they're at home to Southampton, who is going to be playing for a League Cup title. Everton is after. They're at Goodison Park, which is never an easy trip for Chelsea. Then they're at, for the last three games, they're at home to Middlesbrough, at West Brom, and then home to Sunderland. So, yeah, I mean, like those last three teams, probably you would say Chelsea's going to get all 9 points. But
yeah, but you're talking about April. Between now and April, that gap could be, you know, 15 points going that run in. It could be all but decided. I mean, the way that how consistent they've been. If they go on another winning streak, forget about it. And when you look at it, yes, there's a couple of tough games coming up. But after these couple of tough games, they've been able to beat anybody that, like, in front of them that they should beat. They've lost to quality teams. They lost to Spurs. You know, it wasn't like their winning streak got beaten
Spurs
by
Spurs was
Swansea.
The better team that day.
Yeah, it wasn't like they got beaten by Swansea, like Liverpool did, for example, or they're drawing away at, you know, at Burnley or something along those lines. They're beating all those teams.
I think that's an interesting point, Johan, because if you actually look at sort of the points that Chelsea have dropped, their three losses came, like you say, against Spurs, against Liverpool, and against Arsenal. And then their one draw was against Swansea City, which we'll call an aberration. It was in week four of the season. But that shows what makes Chelsea so good. And that's something that I've written a few times on the blog. And that's, champions aren't made in the big games in a long regular season like the Premier League, a 38-game season. They're made in pretty much all of the other games. If you split your big games, if you win half of those, and Chelsea has beaten Manchester United and Manchester City, then if you pick up points when you're playing Middlesbrough and Southampton and Hull and Everton and everybody else, you're probably going to be champion. So that's the funny thing about the Premier League, is that, you know, we hype these big games, and with good reason, because they're the most fun and they seem like they have the most at stake, but they also kind of don't, because that's not really where the title is won in the end.
You know, Shahan and I talked about this on a couple of podcasts ago. It's the phenomenon of David Luiz as the center back of the back three, of the center of the back three, who's been flawless, really. And, you know, I keep expecting him to fall flat on his face, where it's a complete disaster and it causes Chelsea to drop points. I'm going to put it to Leander and Alex. How long can David Luiz play not like what we've seen from David Luiz, like a competent, reliable, making great decisions, smart decisions center back?
You know, the question is, has Conte brought it out in him? Is that something, this is kind of a new dimension to Luiz's game, this consistency that we never really have quite seen before. So, you know, we're kind of in uncharted territory with this reliable rock of the defense that David Luiz has become. So I don't know. I'm thinking that he's gone this far with it, and maybe it's something the manager's worked with him on or something. And I just don't see, you know, he can always have that moment, David Luiz, and it certainly will happen, but will that be enough? Will there be a Gerrard slip moment from Luiz that cost the title? I don't think so. I think we can afford a few David Luiz mistakes. And you know, the guy's been surprisingly consistent.
I think that's Chelsea's 5,000-1, the fact that David Luiz has been this solid and has not fallen on his face.
Well, if you think about what Antonio Conte has done tactically with him, it's kind of genius, because David Luiz, for his comedic propensity, does have enormous strengths that can really help put a team over the top. Because I defy you to find a center back in the Premier League who's as good on the ball as he is. And they've kind of stopped him from running with it so much. He's just excellent with the long ball. He's a good distributor. It's like having another distributor sort of in the back. And that's a rare and precious thing. But to sort of to counteract those defensive lapses, what Conte has essentially done is like wrapped him in cotton balls, because he's got center backs on either side of him, in the form of Azpilicueta and Gary Cahill. He's got wing backs beside them in Victor Moses and Marcos Alonso. And then in front of him, he's got two holding midfielders, usually in Conte and Nemanja Matic. So and then behind him is one of the best goalies in the world, in Thibaut Courtois. So it's like he has on every single side of him, and he has like a buffer zone of one or even two players who are going to sort of protect him and shield him. So, you know, honestly, he doesn't have a huge amount to do on a game-to-game basis. So that kind of brings out his strengths while masking his weaknesses.
I would say that he does plenty, though. When you watch him, the amount of balls he gets his head to, his activity level is through the roof. He's not just the last man in name. He's actually the last man in action. And, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago and we said, if he goes down, I said that was really the stumbling block that I saw for Chelsea, was that he would get suspended or he would get hurt or something. Now we have Zuma back too. And I think Zuma, unlike Cahill, is actually a guy who could potentially step in and play that type of role, because he is that athletic center back. He provides them that opportunity to actually possibly supplement Luis for a couple games. And that's something I don't think that they had in the past.
Well, when I say he doesn't have a huge amount to do, because they have a three-back and because they have the wing-backs, the man-marking doesn't often fall on him, it seems. And so that sort of leaves him almost like a free defender between the two of them, and he can just kind of be like a sweeper type for when the other guys get beaten. But I think that's less responsibility than he would have in a traditional back four, where he's got to mark somebody and provide cover for his partner. And that seems to have brought out the best in him.
Yeah, I'm going to throw this out to you guys. Do you think Spurs came up with a blueprint to beat Chelsea that other people can copy? And, you know, it's only been a few weeks, but do you think there's something there that Tottenham did that teams can expose as we go down these final 16 rounds?
I would say, I don't know if it's necessarily a blueprint, because the way Spurs did it, the personnel that they used, I don't think anybody else has the personnel to pull it off the way that they did. I do think that Chelsea did have a few not really convincing victories prior to that, and really they haven't necessarily looked great. They've just gotten results. And like we were saying, that's the difference between a champion and not a champion, is even when you don't look good, you manage to get 3 points. So, yeah, the blueprint is you score goals and you shut them out. And that's something that it sounds great, but can you really do it against Costa bearing down on you, against Hazard making those mazy runs? And can you get through Courtois, David Luiz at the last line clearing? And then really their wingbacks putting pressure on you on the outside too. It's just, I don't see very many teams being able to pull that off. The top teams have the personnel to potentially, you know, put some pressure on Chelsea, obviously, because that's what makes them top teams. But I personally don't think anyone's going to catch the Blues.
I think injuries is really the only thing that can bring Chelsea back to the pack. That and Mount Diego Costa blowing up and somehow destroying morale again, you know, or really destroying morale and really having an adverse impact on what's been a really, you know, pretty special season so far. Let's talk about the five teams chasing Chelsea. I mean, Arsenal is in second at 47 points, and only 6 points separate Arsenal and sixth place Man United. Guys, so which, you know, we've talked about this before, but really, let's start with Arsenal. Like, how convinced are you that the Gunners, who are currently in second, are a viable threat to Chelsea?
In two words, not very.
You're being honest.
This is coming from a known Arsenal fan, and while I would like to put out some alternative facts, if we're going to deal with real facts, you know that Arsenal are going to mess up, and they're going to go, and they could beat Chelsea, you know, next week, but then they could lose to Hull the following week. And this Arsenal team has definitely shown more resilience than we've seen in the past, particularly that last week in the comeback against Burnley when they were down a man. But I still think we're going to wind up in a situation where they're going to, you know, get blown out by Bayern in the first leg of the Champions League tie, and then come back and win, and have it not be quite enough. And they're going to chase the Premier League title and finish second and maybe win the FA Cup is just unfortunately how I see it.
I have a question for you, Alex.
Sure.
If you were Alexis Sanchez and it goes according to how you just described the season going, would you want to come back to this team?
No, I wouldn't actually, because Alexis Sanchez is still at the age where he could step into just about any other team in the world, you know, barring maybe Barcelona where he already was. But, you know, I think that it's, I don't think it's, I could be surprised. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm pleasantly surprised, but I just think it's going to be the same. And if Sanchez doesn't want to stay, then I wouldn't blame him. I think it would probably be a bit redundant for him to win another FA Cup and finish top four again.
Because, I mean, the rumors of him potentially going to City, for example, that those have been swirling for quite some time.
From the moment he signed, I think.
Yeah. But, I mean, they've really gained momentum recently, especially, you know. If you were Alexis, would you go to City over staying at Arsenal?
I mean, if there's a good dog park in Manchester, then I suppose I'd consider it.
His dogs do get a lot of coverage.
They have their own banner now.
They have their own Instagram account, and it does better than most people's Instagram accounts.
Nuts. Leander, what are your thoughts on the Gunners? Are they a contender?
More importantly, we should probably at this juncture talk about Lionel Messi's dog. And if you've not gone to his Instagram lately, it started out, I don't know what kind of breed it is, I don't get that into that, but it started out as like this fat little puppy, and now it's like the biggest dog you've ever seen in your entire life. It was like way bigger than Messi himself, and stockier somehow too.
Is it like a mastiff or something?
I think it's too fat to be.
What has happened to our podcast?
We're getting to the good
stuff. We're looking at the story here.
We are now the Dogs of Instagram podcast.
That looks like a mastiff, isn't it? No. That's a mix.
Everybody watching on Facebook Live is just looking at you guys.
Well, everyone, yeah, go
Google,
do an image search.
Do
a Yahoo search.
I hate to break it to you, but I think our live feed went down.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's fine.
Probably
for the best.
Sorry to the two viewers out there.
If for anyone who's still on, we're going to switch that off and continue on with the pod. So back to Messi and his dogs is where you left off.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, you know, obviously the champion of any league should be the team that has the most and the best dogs. But it's got to be demoralizing at this point to be a star player in Arsenal, right? And you can see why so many of them over the years have left. I just think it's kind of... Sorry, I'm distracted here by the guys waving at the camera on the Facebook live feed. But this, you look again at this Arsenal team, and there's so many weaknesses there. I mean, you know, imagine that Ozil gets tired and needs a week off, or that Alexis Sanchez, God forbid, has some kind of hamstring injury and is out for 3 weeks, and the entire campaign would be ruined again. I mean, they've come to rely so much on the two of them, on Olivier Giroud. And it's like when one of them is not there, they run into trouble. It's like Arsenal, they can develop players, they can put together a pretty good squad, they can make a title challenge, but for some reason they're incapable of building squad depth where, you know, they can take a few bumps here and there. You know, as soon as there are some injuries, Arsenal's in trouble. And I don't see how that's going to be avoided this year if there's another injury rash.
Well, or if a key player gets suspended for four matches, like has just happened with, you know, Granit Xhaka. So we could already be into that territory where Arsenal's, you know, they're missing Mohamed Elneny because of the African Cup of Nations. You've got Xhaka banned. You've got Cazorla still injured. So we're already into the point where it could start to catch up to them very soon.
Yeah, they only have Ramsey and Coquelin and in the center of the park.
That's the midfield
pairing. And if either of them go down, which both of them have history of going down, they have nobody. I mean, who do you put back there? You have to change formation immediately until Elneny gets back, until Xhaka's ban is over, or really there's just no options. They're in a weird spot right now. I actually think that they should enter the market and buy a holding midfielder, just someone to tie them over just in case, because I think it's too important not to finish in the top four just because you didn't strengthen at a position that you're clearly weak in right now.
Can we talk for a second about this idea that Arsenal are not a rich club and that they can't afford to keep Alexis Sanchez and pay him whatever he wants, and that they can't afford to buy another striker. I mean, the Deloitte Football Money League standings came out again a few weeks ago, and for the second year in a row, Arsenal was the seventh richest club in the world. They have the highest average ticket prices in the Premier League, yet for some reason they keep pleading poverty, and inexplicably their fans keep accepting it. I don't get that.
It's frustrating. I will agree with you. It is very frustrating. And I think part of the problem is Wenger has a poverty mindset and is also not that good at the transfer market. He's not shrewd at it. He bungles deals. You know, you had a player like Luis Suarez who really wanted to come to Arsenal when he was at Liverpool, and they didn't handle the deal correctly. And I think it's a refusal to do the business in the way that the current market operates.
But isn't that what, you know, Arsenal is managed like a business? I mean, as long as Wenger guarantees Champions League football, all is good.
Like, yeah, but so is Bayern Munich is operated completely in the black. Their cheapest season ticket is $10, and they win everything and challenge for everything. You know, you can run a club fiscally responsible and still challenge at the highest level.
But I think that's my contention is that if they don't enter the market and get some cover at that central midfield role, they could not finish in the Champions League this time around. But the Premier League, like, revenues have gone through the roof to such an extent that, frankly, even missing out the Champions League isn't as much of a financial blow as it's been in the past.
Okay, let's go to break. As I said before, we're going to have our installment of our new podcast feature, The Break, where one of us gets to rant and or rave about a singular topic for a couple of minutes. So we will be back after The Break.
I'd like to big up Southampton, because I think that in the past few seasons, you know, we've seen this club promoted to the Premier League, and a lot of Premier League clubs that get promoted, they obviously come and go. And this is not a club with huge resources. They don't have big signings. You know, they tend to lose their manager and their top players every year. But season in and season out, they continue to punch above their weight. You know, they just knocked Liverpool out of the League Cup, having previously knocked Arsenal out. So they've got themselves a final at Wembley with Manchester United to look forward to. And the reason I bring them up is because they're playing Arsenal this weekend in the FA Cup. And I think that they're probably a serious threat. I would think Arsene Wenger would be taking them very seriously. You know, Southampton, it's, I think, to try to get to the heart of why they're so successful, I think their academy system is probably, you know, arguably the best one in England. If you look at the players they've produced over the years, going back to Theo Walcott, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Gareth Bale, and the players they continue to produce, even now, you've got new guys coming in. You know, the game against Liverpool, a lot was made about the fact that Virgil van Dijk, who's been their best player this season, was not going to be available. But, you know, Jack Stevens stepped in, and it was like, no van Dijk, no problem. Also, you had Josh Sims, another academy player, who you know, made a breakaway move and set up Shane Long for the winning goal. So I guess I'm just trying to give a little credit where credit is due. This week, people criticized Liverpool, rightfully so, for being a shambles, for losing that game in the League Cup. But I think that Southampton is definitely a team to be commended. And I know there's some talk about this Chinese consortium possibly coming in and taking in an ownership of the club. And it's definitely something to watch, because if this club gets some money and gets the kind of budget that you know, City and some of the bigger clubs have that come into money, like Chelsea did, you know, 10 or 12 years ago, like City did 8 or 9 years ago, then I think that we might see this club potentially position itself to be a top six type club. So big ups to Southampton. Good luck this season, just not against Arsenal this Saturday.
And we're back. Let's jump to the Manchester sides. I know they're City's in fifth, United is in sixth, but we haven't really covered them at great length, at least on the pod. You know, City's situation. If there's, I think we predicted them to finish to win the league. I'm just going to throw it out there. You know, what is the biggest problem with City? One of my friends who is a very big, you know, he calls himself probably the biggest City fan in America. This is Mark Stein. You know, he says it's Pep. He thinks Pep's the problem. What do you guys think? And Carlo Ancelotti, actually, this past week, came out in defense of Pep, saying that, look, it takes time for the players to adjust to the coach. You know, he hasn't gone out and brought in the players, his players. So there's still this adjustment period. I think the fast start kind of raised expectations, or everyone was quick to say that Pep is a genius and look at him, he's going to run away with the Premier League title. No, we all know that's not happened. This is his biggest challenge he's ever had as a coach, as a manager. But what is if you can point to one thing, like, what is City's problem?
Well, I think the defense is probably the most obvious thing. But I think what there is some truth to that, you know, it takes a while. Like, at Barcelona, these guys knew the system that Pep used intrinsically. At Bayern Munich, you can have a season or two to adjust your system, and you can still win the Bundesliga. In the Premier League, it's not as easy. And I think there has been a period of adaption. I think the defense is a shambles. He inherited a team with a lot of aging players, and I don't think he quite knew what he was getting into with their back line. But then he's done some things, like getting rid of Joe Hart and bringing in Claudio Bravo. Hasn't really worked out that well. So,
but I think some of that also plays into the fact that the guys that Claudio Bravo forces the ball into on the short passes aren't ready for that, aren't really the right players to do it. Like, I mean, you know, he's tried to put Zabaleta in the midfield at times because, A, they've been short, but he kind of also just was doing that when they weren't short. And then you look at, we're talking about, you know, Bakary Sagna, Gael Clichy, like pretty much Arsenal the guys that left Arsenal and came over to City.
More than 5 years ago.
Yeah, now those guys are old. They're not just that they're like former Arsenal guys, they're old. And then you look at Kolarov, you look at Zabaleta. I think on the outside, they're really just old. They need to replace everybody. And in the middle, I'm not convinced by Otamendi. I don't think that they've still figured out that center back's role. I think what Van Dijk has been talked about, I think he's out injured right now. They're just kind of stuttering on it, so I might wait till the summer if they end up doing it. We're getting close to the end of the transfer window. So if he's going to come, he's going to come pretty soon. But I think that you're going to kind of figure out and see if Pep is thinking, all right, we're just going to go for next year, or if he's actually going to try and bring people in right now to try and make quick fixes. I do like one thing that he's done, which is kind of weird because I don't like it, but I kind of do in terms of what he's done with Yaya. And Yaya is a really good distributor of the ball deep in the midfield and almost playing in the defense, but I don't like him being that deep. I do like the fact that they're letting him play those passes and be the distributor and ping balls around, because that is the best way for them to actually maintain possession in that role. There's no one else. I mean, Fernandinho and Fernando, when they are in the team, aren't those guys. You don't want to really drop David Silva that far back, but you kind of need a guy that's that comfortable on the ball to play there, which is why, you know, I thought Gundogan was meant to be that type of player and have a little bit more dynamism. But I personally just think that they need to buy all over the park, starting with the back. In the front, they're fine. The back, everybody, they just need to replace everybody.
Yeah, the staggering thing really about their defense is the amount of money they've spent on it in recent years. I mean, even before Guardiola came, Otamendi cost £28 million. John Stones was £48 million. Eliakim Mangala, who's out on loan because he was so unreliable, was £42 million. I mean, they've thrown a lot of money at that problem and seemingly not really gotten anywhere. I think that Shahan has it right, is that this is an old team. I mean, Toure is 33, Bakary Sagna is 33, Zabaleta is 32, David Silva, Fernandinho, Gael Clichy, Kolarov, Jesus Navas, they're all 31. I mean, the Premier League is a young man's game. I mean, it's such a physically draining league that you're going to get punished for that sort of thing. And while they, I think, made some good additions during the summer, especially Gundogan, who you mentioned, which I think was a good buy, and then Sané and Nolito for the wings, it seems like they have an aging problem, a graying out problem. That's going to take a much bigger makeover than this to fix.
But is Pep going to be allowed to use that as an excuse, especially with the way he has handled the media? I mean, he's not going to get any breaks from the media or or be allowed to to cite that, you know, the and he inherited an aging squad. I just feel like he's going to be held to results because he was made out to be this savior of city.
Yeah, I mean, to his credit, he has not blamed the players. Even after poor results, he said the players, they're trying, they're working hard. Sometimes it doesn't work out. But he says, I like my players. And he's actually defended the personnel he has. But from the outside looking in, they need to make replacements. They need to buy big. We're talking about City. They will buy big. You know, Jesus coming in is actually, he already looks like a quality player. And mm-hmm. we only saw him for, 15 minutes maybe? Yeah. And it was like, wow, this guy's the best player they've had.
Like his first four touches, he created chances all over the place.
Yeah, all four of them should have been goals, frankly. You're looking at it, you're like, wow, okay, yeah, they'll be fine there. I personally think that they should not really focus on the attack side of it. Because, I mean, okay, if Alexis falls into their lap and wants to come, by all means, go get him. But I think that going for De Bruyne, Jesus, he's solid. You look at Aguero still there. I don't know how much longer he'll be there. If he leaves, obviously you replace him. But if he's there, I think attacking side, you're fine. That's the one area you don't necessarily need to address. Everywhere else. And, you know, you do take a second look at the goalkeeper, but I do think that a lot of what Bravo gets in trouble for is he's dealing with guys that aren't used to passing out of the back all the time. I mean, it's not like when he was passing to Piqué and he's passing to Mascherano, it's a different story. Or if he's passing to Alba, those guys all are used to the ball coming there. They're used to making those getting wide enough for him to actually find him. Yeah, you know, it's a different ball game when you're in the Premier League and you're playing with guys that aren't used to playing out of the back and they're trying to learn how to do it.
But beyond that, the goalkeeper's most basic duty, keeping the ball out of the back of the net. Can you remember a spectacular, vital, important save made by Bravo? He's not made one.
He's been awful.
And Hart would have made some of those saves.
So. Yeah, Hart was a much better shot stopper than Bravo was. Bravo is meant to be more of a, I guess we'll call it a 1.5. He's meant to, you know, it's not quite a 2, but he's meant to be more of a sweeper keeper style, and it's not working. It hasn't been working. City's still. It's not like they're playing awful football. They're still controlling matches. You know, there's something that I remember a long time ago, back when Pep was at Barcelona, and it's something that Xavi used to echo too. Their philosophy that Pep lives by, and you'll even hear this in post-match press conferences, is controlling the game. They don't necessarily have to create the most chances. They're going to make sure that you don't have the ball. We want the ball. We're going to have control of this match as much as they can. I think a couple of weeks ago when they lost, they had 71% possession.
Yeah.
They're still controlling matches. They're just not, you know, they're not finishing the product. And when they do get caught out, because their defense is so weak, counterattack is just exposing them over and over again.
The stats heavily favored them in against Tottenham. You know, they only had 55% possession, but they outshot Spurs 17-6. So you're right. The attack isn't the problem, but you know, the results are what count. And you know, his unwillingness to change, I think, is what most of the media kind of point to his, you know, being naive about the Premier League. Do you think there's anything to that?
I mean, he's stubborn. I don't know about naive. I mean, Pep is a very strong personality. I mean, you have to be at that level, but he's a maniacal, very intense person. You remember when he, you know, went up to Kimmich after that Champions League match where they'd won, and he just sits there and he just starts going and he starts talking with such intensity and ferocity. After a victory, there's no celebration there.
I remember that. And the commentators were kind of, they went silent. And someone said, oh, this is a very important teaching moment for Pep Guardiola. And I'm thinking, wow, he just won. And look at him. He's gone crazy.
No, but you know what? Kimmich actually talked about that and what they were talking about after the fact, I think after Pep left. And Pep was actually saying, he was actually encouraging him. He was saying, you did brilliantly. And then he talked about the couple of spots where he didn't mess up. But then he continued, I was like, no, don't be mad. Like, he actually was reinforcing, but he was saying it with such intensity. And it's that personality that I think Pep is a very, very unique character in that he's, I think his manner and his method and the way he sees the world, he's going to impose on his players.
But here's the crazy thing, as we talked about earlier. You know, Mourinho is the calm, sane one in Manchester.
The stable one.
He's the old hand. He is the stable one.
From the special one to the stable one.
We're taping this on the day of United playing in the EFL Cup semifinal. It is a final. They lost 2-1 to Hull, but go through on the aggregate score of 3-2. Guys, I mean, how surprised are you, especially after the way United started the season, that they've been able to Mourinho has been able to figure this out kind of below the surface. Well, Chelsea's making this run, and you know, things are happening with City, and Tottenham's being Tottenham, and you know, Wenger's shoving forth officials. How surprising is it that Mourinho's been able to get United to where it is? I mean, they're not in the top four yet, but they're in position.
I think something you have to recognize there is that Mourinho is way more experienced managing a big club in the Premier League than all those other guys put together. Conte and Guardiola are in their first seasons, obviously. Pochettino is on a team. You know, he's been in the Premier League a little while, but, you know, he's only kind of now turned Spurs into a real title contender. Jurgen Klopp has been there for just over a year. You know, Mourinho sort of understands, I think, that sometimes in the Premier League, you need to draw a lot of attention to yourself to really pull away the scrutiny from your players. And sometimes you need to just kind of go along and go easy. And I think he's understood that this isn't going to be United's year yet. And it probably isn't going to be. I mean, he's so shrewd and he's been doing this for so long. I think he just kind of got that this wasn't the year to make it all about him, that they needed a year to sort of rebuild and to get their ducks in a row. And that next year, I imagine you're going to be hearing a lot more from him, and there will be a lot more rivalries and sort of firebrand speeches and things, because he sort of knows that they're better off just sort of keeping their heads down this year.
I noticed you conspicuously left out Arsene Wenger, the specialist in failure.
Yes. Well, you know, let's call that an indictment on Arsenal.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think, you know, initially at the start of the year, I was looking at this saying, hey, there's no way that Mourinho doesn't take advantage of the fact that everybody else doesn't have the experience he has and hasn't been able to spend quite to the levels that he was able to spend to. I thought he was going to win the league. It's taken him about, you know, they started off really well, and then it's taken him about half a season to re-find that mojo or actually kind of look like they're improving by week by week. And when you look into going into the summer, I don't think that their squad needs nearly the overhaul that a squad like City needs. And I don't think that they're in nearly, you know, as nervous about entering the summer window as Arsenal is. It's one of those things where they actually look like they're going to be one of the more stable teams going forward, because they already did the spending the first year and he's been able to gain momentum. And I think this will carry on and going into next year. And frankly, I think he'll probably end up starting next season as a favorite to win the title. Like, they were the favorite to win the title this season, too.
Do you think Zlatan stays, though? I mean, he's already proclaimed that he's conquered the Premier League.
I think for another season, I would think. You know,
he's. I mean, he's getting paid loads and loads and loads of money. The only reason he would leave is to go to China, but some of the comments he's made indicate that he has no interest in going to China. I mean, he could come and conquer America if he wants to, but I think he's going to have to take a pay cut to do that. The wages he's on are just silly. So I think, you know, coming over on a free transfer to United, I think, he signed like a 3-year deal, didn't he?
I want to say two, but I think
in any case, he's
actually, it was a 1-year deal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I think it's either they've extended it or they've talked of extending it. But I think
I would imagine that he's in no rush to leave unless he wants to go back to like Malmo and finish off at the club where he started.
Yeah, or go someplace new like LA Galaxy.
Yes. Keep dreaming over there, Alex.
Well, to your point, if you actually look at the squad at United, they have a young core that they've sort of slowly and meticulously brought together and done very expensively. But that's I think really promising, and that if you keep them together for half a decade, you're going to win some titles with them, because Pogba is 23 and he's sort of really starting to find his feet. Anthony Martial is 21. I think he's going to be a wonderful striker. And when it's all said and done, that transfer fee for him the initial 36 million pound fee that was going to rise to 60 million. You know, 10 years from now, that could look like a bargain. So he's 21. Marcus Rashford is 19. Jesse Lingard, he's 24. Henrik Mkhitaryan is a little bit older. He's 28. But you've got a bunch of guys there on that team, under Herrera, someone like that, he's 27, who, you know, they've got a lot of really good football ahead of them. And they've been playing together for a little while now. And I think if you can introduce some stability, you've really got the framework there of a dynasty.
Yeah, and then Antoine Griezmann is 25. Oh, wait, sorry, he's not with the club yet.
Hey.
What about Wayne Rooney? What do you guys, still see him at United a year from now?
I don't. I think Mourinho has done a great job to graciously phase him to a, or if you want to say demote, to a bench role, a substitutes role. You know, he still has a role, a value to the team, but for next year, I think Mourinho's ready to move on and bring in someone, you know, who's not going to be making as much money and be that far north of 30.
Yeah, I mean, the rumor that's been around for a while but seems to be gaining more and more momentum is that now that he's got the record, that China's basically waiting there. I think their transfer window, like, he can leave as late as February. So I think like middle to late of February, if I'm correct. In any case, I think that's a win-win for all parties, including Wayne. Go make a boatload of money, as well as United. You know, he got the record he wanted. He gets to not go to a different Premier League team and play lesser football. And United basically, you know, washed their hands clean.
He would be the star signing for the Chinese Super League.
By far. He would be the biggest star in that league. And, you know, the Chinese, they kind of limited how many foreign players you can have on each team. Wayne Rooney is the guy that you want on your team, no matter which team you are in the Chinese Super League, because he's already a big star. United's the biggest club in the world in many ways. And so having the face of Manchester United for the past two decades plop down in China, it's a win-win for everybody. The Chinese Super League wins, Wayne Rooney wins, bank account wins, Manchester United wins.
Supposedly Rooney's not that crazy about moving to the idea of moving to China.
Yeah, that's why they pay him enough so that he becomes crazy about it.
But there is the rumor he could go back to Everton. There's the continuing MLS rumor too. But I agree with Joe that he probably will not be at Manchester United one way or another after this season.
I would love to see him with the Galaxy.
That'd be exciting.
Or LAFC.
Hey.
Yeah. You know, but with, you know, with the Galaxy needs someone like a Wayne Rooney to, with LAFC coming next year, definitely. That definitely will win the PR battle here, because that is coming. Not to delve into MLS so much for you guys, but
we're losing viewers.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, listeners by the second.
So I'm going to put this to you guys. Between fifth place City and sixth place United, which one of these teams is that you see is assured of finishing top four, and what is the ceiling? How high can they go? Even they are respectively 12 and 14 points behind Chelsea.
I'm going to go with actually United. I think look to me to have the momentum, and I think City's,
or both. You know, like maybe you see both going top four.
Possibly, but I think of the two, United are the more likely. I think City's still in disarray. I think United had some problems early in the season. They seem to have figured them out. You know, I know City's ahead in the table right now, but to me, I just think that they have deeper problems. And I think Man United will finish above them and probably in the top four.
Yeah, I have United, Tottenham, Chelsea, and I actually think Liverpool is going to drop out and Arsenal is going to be number four like they always are.
I would have guessed that Guardiola gets it together and that City finishes fourth, United finishes fifth, and Liverpool tumbles, because I think Liverpool's in trouble.
Yeah, I agree with Leander. I think Liverpool's a team that falls out of the top four. But I think City is the team that takes that spot. I don't see United, as you know, even with this run that they're on, being able to get to the top four. I just feel like this is the run they've made, and stumbles are ahead of them. I think they're playing the best. This is the best we're going to see from United, I think, and it won't be enough.
I'll remind you that they've only lost three games this season, Joe. That's level with Chelsea. That's
exactly my point. They've got their worst footballs ahead of them. Well, we got to go, guys. For Leander, Shahan, Alex, I'm Joe Lago. Until next time, this has been the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast. Thanks for listening.